Chapter 4. Terra, the Imperial Palace. The Great Chamber had been the seat of power on Terra since the palace had been established. It was a formidable stadium, a veritable colosseum, with a central dais and seats for the high lords, and then vast tiers of seats for the more minor officials and lords, lesser functionaries, petitioners, and so forth. At full capacity, it could hold 500,000 people. It had been damaged during the siege, but it had been restored and repaired in a sympathetic fashion. A huge statue of Rogel Dorn had been erected at the east end, commemorating his superhuman efforts of defence in general and his extraordinary running battle in the hallways just outside that very place. It had not been Dorn's choice. Gilliman had ordered the statue raised. "My brother watched over the palace during our darkest hour," he had said. "He should watch over the council evermore." Of late, in the last few decades, the Senatorum Imperialis had taken to meeting in other places. The Great Chamber was too big for anything except full meetings, many claimed, too noisy, too formal. Favour was placed on more closed sessions in smaller chambers for intimacy and immediacy. The Clanium Library was often used, almost as a private cabinet. Sometimes the High Lords convened in the Anisideran Chapel. Most preferred was the Cerebrium, a comparatively small wood-panelled room near the top of the Widdershins Tower. It was said that the Emperor had favoured the rooms of the tower for meditation and mindfulness, and the Cerebrium in particular.
"It makes us feel closer to his thoughts to convene here," Udo had once exclaimed, defending the regular use of the room.
Vangarich knew perfectly well why they did it. The Cerebrium had a large figured wooden table at its centre, and the table was big enough to take 12 chairs. Only the 12 members of a high senatorum could sit in session together. Secondary officials, like Vangarich, were obliged to lurk in the shadows or take seats along the wall. It was power play. It was infantile. The Cerebrium was a fine room, well appointed and quite atmospheric. Opening the casement shutters afforded the room an extraordinary view across the palace roofscape and down over the ring gates and the armoured flanks of the world. Vangarich had often thought it would make an excellent private study or office. However, it was hardly a place to run the Imperium from. It was too small, too insubstantial, too amateurish. It was a back room fit only for private thoughts and backroom deals. It was not a place of government. Vangarich entered, his attendance solemnly noted by the servitor of record. The High Lords were taking their seats. He nodded a greeting with Lord Militant Heth, his only true ally among the High 12, and then found a place in the flip-down wooden pews under the east windows, where other lesser lords and functionaries were seating themselves. They greeted him as if he was one of them. He was not. Less than a century before, one of the permanent seats among the High 12 had belonged to the Grand Master of the Officio Assassinorum. The office was one of the old 12 that had sat in governance of the Imperium since the Senatorum's inception. Times, as Brother Daylight had said, were changing. Some offices, and none more than the Office of Assassins, were now seen as obsolete at best or archaic and primitive at worst. They had been edged out of the inner 12 and either dispensed with altogether or relegated to the lesser seats outside the High Circle. Other, newer stations had advanced in their place. This was ignominious. Vangarich accepted that some of the Imperium's newer institutions absolutely deserved a seat at the table. Both the agents of the Inquisition and the ecclesiarchs of the Ministerium required representation among the High Lords since the Heresy War. They were fundamental parts of the modern Imperium. Vangarich would not argue that. What he would argue was that the Council should have been expanded to admit them, rather than culled to find them places. He watched them take their seats at the table, talking together, some laughing. Venand, the inquisitorial representative, was the only one not talking to anybody. She was quiet and reserved, and surprisingly young, with sharp cheekbones and very short steel-grey hair. Technically, she was his replacement. Technically, the inquisitorial representative had taken the permanent seat that had traditionally belonged to the Grand Master of the Officio Assassinorum. Vangerich held no grudge. He quite liked Venand, and he'd admired her predecessor. He believed in the near-autonomous function of the Inquisition because it reflected, in spirit, the same safety-catch mechanism as the Assassinorum. He often met with Venand and others of her kind, in private, of course, to discuss operational techniques, methodology of detection and research, jurisdiction, and also to share inter-agency intelligence. He found that the Inquisitors were often astonished at the level of intelligence his office was able to gather, and they often turned to him, clandestinely, for favours. It was all part of the give and take. Heth was the Lord Commander Militant of the Astra Militarum, an old, maimed veteran. Though the Guard was the largest military body in the Imperium, Heth felt it to be very much the junior third service of the Adeptus Astartes and the Navy. It was probably why he sought out unlikely allies with voting rights, such as Vangerich. Lansung was certainly ignoring him. Lansung, broad, red of face and booming of voice, was the Lord High Admiral of the Imperial Navy. His corpulent form was encased in a uniform of oceanic blue, threaded with silver braid. He took a while to be seated, engaging Tobris Eckharth, the Master of the Administratum, in some convoluted piece of scandal-mongering, while Vernal Zek looked on with patient indulgence. Zek, the giant among them, was the Grand Provost Marshal of the Adeptus Arbitrators. He was one of the two most heavily augmented humans among the High Twelve. He was not particularly amused or even diverted by Langsun's outrageous gossip, but he was forcing himself to at least feign a show of interest. Vangerich was aware that Zek's mind was a billion light-years away, processing the layers of administrative and forensic data, the ceaseless work of keeping Terra's gargantuan hives ordered and policed. The look of wry amusement on his leonine face was a simulation for Langsun's benefit. Similarly, Lansung wasn't at all interested in speaking to Eckharth, other than to cultivate the loyalties between Navy and Administratum. He was telling a story at Eckharth so he could get Zek's attention and be seen to be the close and genuine confidant of the Provost Marshal. "Maybe I should draw up a map," thought Vangerich. "A map or chart, some kind of visual aid, a diagram of the basic interpersonal relations of the High Twelve. It could be colour-coded, to reveal areas of contempt, deceit, insincerity, political expediency, and outright rancour. Yes, I might do that, and present it to the Senatorum one day under any other business," he thought. At the other end of the table, Kubik, the Fabricator General of the Adeptus Mechanicus, was conducting a dialogue with Messring, the Ecclesiarch of the Adeptus Ministorum, and Helad Gibran, the Paternoval Envoy of the Navigators. Kubik was, of course, the other extensively augmented person present, but his alterations had been elective and had begun at an early age, rather than being the result of repair and injury, like Zek's. Vangerich watched Kubik's actions and movements with great interest. He had only limited experience of killing servants of the Mechanicus, and it was a skill he felt he ought to develop, given the vast political and materiel power of Mars. He thought, instinctively, they would be hard to kill. The Navigators, equally inhuman, at least seemed physically frail and vulnerable. Vangerich had already prepared methodologies on some of the other subspecies of the table. The haunted spectral servants of the Astronomicon, represented in the High Twelve by Volquan Sark, the Master of the Astronomicon, were still human enough for conventional processes. The telepaths were a different order of things. Abdulias Anwar, the Master of the Adeptus Astra Telepathica, was typical of their malevolent and discomforting kind. To deal with telepaths, with the Imperium's most powerful sanctioned telepaths, well, that was why Vangerich had brokered such close ties with Venand and her ilk. Juskina Tull, the Speaker of the Chartist Captains, was the 11th of the High Twelve. A magnificent woman in an almost theatrically ostentatious gown, she occupied a role that many thought was the most trivial of all the seats. On the other hand, the merchant fleets represented nearly 90% of the Imperium's interstellar capability. In times of crisis, the Speaker wielded power
greater than the Lord High Admiral. A bell sounded. The delegates moved to their places, even the most exalted of them. Cherub servitors and vox recorder drones buzzed around the cerebrium as though it were an aviary. Lord Gilliman entered the crowded, panelled chamber and took his seat. He bowed his head to his 11 senior fellows. He was the Lord Commander of the Imperium, the Commander-in-Chief of all Imperial military assets. His head was shaved, and the huge old scar traversing his scalp and neck was very visible. Though beyond any single discipline or arm of the Imperial war machine, he wore a braided uniform that was, in style at least, an echo of the Grand Admiral's uniform he had worn during his illustrious pre-senatorum career. His name was Udin Macht Udo. He was not the first human to hold the chair of the Senatorium Imperialis, but like all his predecessors, human and transhuman alike, he used the formal honorary title of his office, the name of the first Lord Commander, Gilliman of Macragge. Udo glanced around the chamber. His eyes, the left one glazed and milky under the lip of the long scar, fixed upon Eckarth, the master of the administratum.
"Bring us to order, sir,"
Lord Gilliman said. Eckarth nodded, activated the cogitator recorder that was crouching on the table in front of him, and began to type on the quivering spindle keys that unfurled from it like the wings of a giant moth.
"High lords, we are now in session,"
Eckarth began.